Everyone was in a festive mood, though not everyone loved the Italian grappa that was Gold's favorite aperitif. Eisner had never met Roy's wife before, and in contrast to the understated Roy, he found her to be acerbic, outspoken, and effervescent. Patty made it clear that it was her decision as much as Roy's to force a management change at Disney, and he made a mental note not to underestimate her, or Roy for that matter. As the dinner concluded, Gold made a toast to new management. Wells handed out elegant Mickey Mouse watches engraved with September 22, 1984, the date of the pivotal board meeting. "Thank you," he said to Roy and Gold. "We know you're responsible for our being here." "Anytime we disappoint you, just tell me," Eisner added. "You got me this job. I'll never forget it. If I ever lose your confidence, let me know, and I'll resign." 2. Jeffrey Katzenberg was so eager to begin work at Disney that he'd started meeting with Eisner and Wells the same weekend they got their jobs. These weekend sessions to plot strategy continued, usually at Wells' house, even while Katzenberg was nominally still working at Paramount. And Eisner continued to advise Katzenberg on projects still underway at Paramount. Eisner had committed Paramount to a biblical epic, King David, starring Richard Gere as David and directed by Bruce Beresford. Katzenberg was now shepherding the production. 3 weeks into filming, Katzenberg sent Eisner the dailies. Eisner called Katzenberg as soon as he saw them. "What's going on?" he asked. "What do you mean?" Katzenberg replied. "Why is Richard Gere wearing a dress and earrings?" "That's what Bruce said they looked like," Katzenberg explained, referring to the ancient Hebrews. "I don't see David in a dress," Eisner said. He felt vindicated when King David failed at the box office. But what happened at Paramount was rapidly fading in importance to Eisner. At the weekend strategy sessions, Disney officials not already earmarked for dismissal were summoned to make presentations, among them Stan Kinsey, a young vice president in charge of operations, finance, and new technology. Kinsey, a Stanford Graduate School of Business graduate and Goldman Sachs alumnus, was a golden boy of the previous regime. Miller liked his golf game and had personally sponsored his admission into the exclusive Bel Air Country Club. But the new executives seemed impressed by Kinsey's aggressive plan to reduce the studio's overhead by 30%. Kinsey was also eager to share a more important project he had underway, involving a new technology operation that was an offshoot of George Lucas's Industrial Light and Magic, the Star Wars director's special effects operation outside San Francisco. He'd been at the Disney Animation Building one afternoon the year before when three engineers, Lem Davis, Dave Wolf, and Mark Kimball, took him aside. "Can we show you something?" they'd asked quietly. They took him into a darkened room and showed him a computer screen displaying a boat that had been computer-generated in vector form. There was no color, but the drawing was almost three-dimensional. "Can we get $12,000 to buy one of these vector graphics machines?" they asked. "What do the animators think?" Kinsey asked. "They love it," the engineers said. "Then why aren't you asking for $12 million?" Kinsey went into high gear. He'd been a Stanford classmate of Scott McNeely, chief executive of Sun Microsystems,